Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sane, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham, it's Friday, April 7th, 2017. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Glad to have you along for the latest edition of the WUNC Politics Podcast. We'll be discussing all sorts of things today. Raleigh, Washington, Syria, perhaps, some ruminations from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts as well. We've got a journalist who also doubles as a comedian and father of two on the line, Dan Boylan. How are you?
Jeff, it's a pleasure to be on the show with you again. I think we did this some months ago there. I was over in Durham when I used to work at the Insider, back at my old perch there and right at the General Assembly in Raleigh. I'm doing very well. I recently relocated to Washington, D.C., where I'm covering national security for the Washington Times, and I'm actually based on Capitol Hill, up on the third floor of the Capitol.
It was a lousy setup by me. I will own that. A couple of points as we get into this. One, I think you're the first repeat guest on the podcast, so you should be honored. Two, yes,
Thank
Dan worked
you.
For the NC Insider, which is a subscription-based service, a very valuable service to press members and lobbyists and lawmakers and those who are kind of in the political bubble here in North Carolina, and you have moved recently to the Washington Times. So we'll start there. I think pretty big news that came out last night, the efforts, the missile attacks on Syria, the first military action or the first significant military action that we've seen during the Trump administration. What did you make out of what happened last night? What do you think initially, and what are your thoughts on it now, a night after?
Let's see. I'll give you the Washington perspective. I haven't been here that long, but I've been, like all of the country, I think, following the incredible drama of the Trump administration since he's been elected. And, from my perspective, I think that Syria has long been a problem, and the Obama administration had difficulty wrestling with this proxy war. A lot of the world, I think, a lot of the world had come to look to us for leadership in that part of the world in the post-Iraq times. You guys had gone in there, the U.S. had gone in there, we'd stirred the region up. What were we doing with Syria? What was the end game? Were we going to get involved? And when the Obama administration didn't get involved, you had a leadership vacuum, right? So I think on the one hand, Congress seems to be, a lot of folks in here who don't necessarily like the president said this was good that we actually did something. That's one part of the answer. I think the second part of the answer is that the timing was a lot of questions might be asked this week about the timing, because there was President Trump down at Mar-a-Lago in Florida at his resort with the wind coming off the Atlantic with none other than President Xi Jinping of China. And that's, what's more important in the world, asserting ourselves in Syria and the Middle East over an alleged chemical attack, which was awful if it was real, or our relationship with China. Why did it have to happen? Why did this response have to happen last night in the midst of a two-day summit the president was having with Xi Jinping?
Well, do you kid or expound? I mean, obviously Russia's a key player in all of this. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think that the Trump administration here in Washington, we sometimes joke and say that the city almost feels like it's shaking because he came in as this anti-establishment figure with a disdain for the establishment here. And he hasn't used the State Department much, and he's got his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, out there. And they've been talking about, not wanting to deal with Assad. Their focus was on the Islamic State, and then they swing around very quickly and decide to bomb in Syria. You bring up Russia, which has been a huge part of the early Trump administration because there are these allegations about Russian meddling in the 2016 election. So a lot more questions, thousands more questions than answers.
Fair enough. Okay. So your new post in Washington is the Washington Times. My perception of that is a a la the Wall Street Journal, a conservative-leaning paper. Is that fair? Can we preface the conversation with that? Is that fair? Not that that means you're conservative, but it's a conservative paper, yes?
Yeah, it is a conservative paper. The opinion page is more so than the news operation here. The news operation tends to be one of these old school operations. The Washington Times is endowed by the Church of Reverend Sun Myung-moon. So in a sense, that's given the newsroom terrific resources because we haven't experienced the gyrations of some a lot of newspapers and media outlets in the last 15, 20 years reacting to the Internet and having to slash staff so significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So the newsroom actually has resources, and the ownership doesn't get involved in what we do on the news desk at all. It's a core of sort of old-school reporters that just get down to it and really do a lot of source reporting and get their ears to the ground, you know.
And for our listeners that don't know, who is Sun Myung-moon?
He was a religious leader from Korea.
We're talking about Syria, and these are issues of defense, right? You are covering issues of security. What are you focusing on? What's high priority for you?
I think Groucho Marx had an expression which was once, politics is the art of looking for trouble, finding it everywhere, diagnosing it incorrectly, and applying the wrong remedies. So I'm watching national security.
Right. Where are you looking? Are you looking abroad? You're looking within congressional circles? Who are you taking out to lunch?
Yeah, I got my accreditation to cover the House and the Senate, so I'm actually based at the Capitol, up on the third floor, and I'm watching the committees that deal with national security, that being Armed Service Committee, both the House and the Senate, the House and the Senate Select Committees on Intelligence, and Foreign Relations Committees. And right now, the Intelligence Committee has gone through these gyrations of attempting to deal with the investigation into the alleged Russian meddling in the 2016 elections.
Right. And in terms of the two U.S. senators from North Carolina, Richard Burr and Tom Tillis, how important are they to your beat?
They are important. Senator Richard Burr is actually the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, along with Senator Warner, who's a former governor of Virginia, Mark Warner. And they seem to be a pretty simpatico bipartisan duo. The House Intelligence Committee this week, it's Republican. The chairman recused himself from the actual Russian investigation.
That's Nunes, right? Devin Nunes, you're talking about?
Devin Nunes,
yeah.
from
Nunes,
California.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So Richard Burr is playing the Senate investigation is seen as a bit more credible, a bit more serious. Thus far, it hasn't really gotten its teeth sunk into the meat of the issue too much yet, but traditionally the Senate Intelligence Committee on the Hill is seen as a bit more serious, and Richard Burr is heading that up. I think that Richard Burr occupies a position in Washington somewhat similar to North Carolina in that he's a very straight fellow and not too many folks know too much about him. I think that he's somebody that he stays on script, which in an Intelligence Committee investigation is probably a very good thing. Because as soon as you start to dribble and drab out information, what's classified, what is not classified, the tendrils of these things are fast and sharp and they spread everywhere, and your investigation could go off track dramatically very quickly. So the fact that he's really straight is a very good thing, I think, in this case.
I've remarked to some people that outside of Washington, Raleigh may just be the epicenter for partisan bickering in our country at the moment. When I have been up to D.C., for work, but also just for pleasure. I mean, it seems to me like there's much more, obviously, there's much more energy. It's a much bigger city. Politically speaking, what are, I guess, the things that have stood out to you most here in a month, whether they're differences or similarities or linking or fracturing the two capitals of Raleigh and Washington?
Again, Jeff, you and I used to pal around there in the General Assembly and keep each other buoyant and sharp by joking. And I think that there was that sometimes we'd fire quotes at each other. And I think that there was one by Will Rogers who once said, if you ever injected truth into politics, you'd have no politics. right?
Yeah.
If you ever knew the truth in a
politics. Sorry, my mic was off.
Politics.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are some parallels? Tim Moore, the speaker down there, I recall being with Tim, and who was a fascinating character to get close to, especially during, you know, HB2 and some of the insights that he would have. And he would sometimes say, you know, the other side is offended that people are playing politics in politics. You know, you can't take politics out of politics, right?
No, you can't. That's no.
Yeah, I think that the bickering, the partisan bickering, I think is a symptom of a larger issue in North Carolina, and that it really does mirror it demographically, and the way that you've got your split between Democrats and Republicans and unaffiliated voters, it mirrors what's going on in the country. And that is, you know, in the country we shifted from the first African-American president to the oldest, richest president we've ever had. It's a dramatic schizophrenic shift. And that's what the country's going through. It's kind of the old, much more white, middle-class vision of what this country is.
Sure, versus, and rural, for sure.
And rural, for sure. And versus much more racially diverse city populations that are growing and need resources. And, you know, North Carolina, I remember getting those stats sometimes that, what was it, like 78 counties had lost population.
Right, you know? And out of 100 counties. I mean, maybe more than that. I mean, it might have been 80 or, yeah, maybe 78 sounds about right. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Eight out of 10, right.
It's like the French countryside or something. And you do step back, and when you roam around North Carolina, you go for a drive, those country folks are traditional. They're good folks, but they're just not interested in what's going on in the Triangle. And, you know, people get on their high horse and call them backwards or whatever, and that just fuels the whole thing. And then city folks hate to go out and deal with those folks. So, unfortunately, there's not the, you know, you get cultural clashes that in North Carolina I just think are really exaggerated because it's such a fast-growing state.
Right.
And then that the partisan bickering, well, comes to the surface then in the General Assembly, which I used to say to my wife, we were living right by Cameron Village.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to her, you know, you're living in Cameron Village, we're living in Raleigh, but I work at the General Assembly, which is like, you know, it has nothing to do with Raleigh nor
and
Cameron
nothing
Village.
Like Cameron Village, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And I think all of these, I mean, to maybe thread the needle here, the bathroom bill, House Bill 2, was, sure, it was to some small degree about people who are transgender and gender identity and bathrooms. And one of the things I have butted heads with people, colleagues, friends, a number of people over the last year is that it, you know, it's to me, it was much more about the timing of what you're talking about, changing demographics, the rise of populism, Trump's candidacy. And, you know, it was a great political issue. And I mean, great in terms of got people fired up on both sides, generated a lot of money, a lot of controversy, a lot of attention. And they're, you know, I don't know if we can say with any certainty, and we've talked about this on the podcast before with other guests, that there were any true casualties of House Bill 2. Pat McCrory lost, but I think he was hindered by I-77 tolls and certainly the film credit issue in Wilmington. So I'm pontificating here, but I guess the question I'm trying to spit out toward you is House Bill 2, legacy of House Bill 2. You were here for much of the hall. What do you think the legacy of this is, if we can tell? And we might not be able to tell yet.
Yeah, this is a great question. A couple of thoughts. I'll offer you two large thoughts on that. And one was actually from Speaker Tim Moore from his office. And I was there in August. So the short session, the 2016 short session had ended. I was there in August. It was quiet time. So I went up to his office with my old colleague, Patrick Gannon, who was a longtime, you know, political investigative reporter, my colleague at The Insider.
It's a good hack.
To run all the time.
Yep.
And yeah, great hack. News and Observer, Charlotte Observer. We were up there and we were talking to Moore about HB2 and what his, you know, what did he really think about it? And I mentioned to him that I'd actually been in Turkey when news of it happened. I was over there. My wife's Turkish. I was in Turkey, and that was the lead story on the BBC just when the legislation had passed in a one-day session. And Moore, who's a witty character, he And he can really say things without saying. He sort of throws the dots out there and allows you to try and connect them afterwards. You realize that's why he's Speaker of the House. It's a very complicated job, and he's good at maneuvering conversations certain ways. But he got precise on this one, and he told a real funny story. He said, well, actually, Dan, I was in Prague with my family on vacation because we just passed it, and we went over there for spring break with my kids. And one of my boys turned to me in the hotel lobby in Prague and said, hey, Dad, look at that. And Tim Moore said, and I turned around, and on the TV was CNN International, and there was B-roll, background footage, of me gaveling a session to order there in the North Carolina General Assembly. However, I was standing in Prague in the hotel lobby, and he said, that was a weird feeling.
Yeah, yeah. They had no idea, right? They had no idea the attention and the consequences, and they didn't know what they were setting off a year ago March, I don't think.
I don't think so, because I don't think so. At the same time, I think that, you know, the legacy of it, I think that it probably if you're more conservative lawmakers in North Carolina, it's somewhat of a badge of honor, right?
Sure, sure.
I think that if you're of the more progressive kind of Jim Hunt, this is North, you know, it's just like North Carolina. There's the Jim Hunt side of North Carolina, and there's the Jesse Helms side of North Carolina. And if you're of the more progressive side, saying, you know, we used to be this very progressive part of the South, it was a black eye. And I remember during the elections in November talking to a number of political scientists, Michael Bitzer and Joe Stewart there with the North Carolina Free Enterprise
Foundation.
You know, and Joe does a great job of bringing together folks to really think about the big picture of what's going on in these election cycles. And the line that I got in a couple pieces of preview stuff that I did on the election 2016 was, you know, this was a black eye for the state's image nationally. And that if you were a big company, would you think about coming to North Carolina? That's where it gets really tricky, because at the same time, conservatives like Phil Berger have gotten out and made the business climate much more. It's not a hostile place to get your business going. It's cheaper to get things up and running there, right?
For sure.
They've cut the corporate income tax. They've done that stuff. But at the same time, there's this open fight, culture warfare, between the country folks and the city folks.
Right. Right. I'm not going to keep you for too much longer, but I want to, I guess, bounce through a couple of different random things, because that's occasionally what I'll do here. You're a quote machine. You like to quote, whether it's Groucho Marx or Tip O'Neill, Bill Belichick. I think I've caught you a couple times. I won't ask you for particular quotes on the spot unless you've got them, but the most quotable people from your time here in North Carolina, a Republican and a Democrat, a strategist and a lawmaker, however you want to do it, but a couple of the most quotable people, things that people that left you with just some good quips.
Yeah, I would say that Tom Apodaca, he was rules chairman, right?
In the Senate, yep, a Republican from out west, yeah.
Republican from out west. How many terms did he do? Seven terms?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Seven or eight, yep.
You know, he had a fascinating background in that he was a bail bondsman, and his father was a bail bondsman down in Texas who actually secured the bail for Johnny Cash when he was busted for drugs down in...
In El Paso, is that right?
In El Paso.
Yeah.
So Apodaca was just this great character, and I showed up, and I think that he realized if you weren't a kid, if you were a decent reporter, you know, he could wrestle with you. He was willing to share stuff with you. He'd try and spin you as the best would, but he also appreciated that your job was to crank out copy and try and cover things. And I remember there was a great quote that he had. It was at the end of the legislative session in 2016. There was a wrestling match over, I think it was it Asheville City Council?
That sounds right. Yep, yep.
Right, changing some laws.
Districts and yeah.
Right, changing the way that the districts could, the city could vote. And it was this big, just brewing, wild tsunami swirling all around. And people wanted to yell on the Senate floor, and there needed to be more debate. And Apodaca, you know, got up to make a point of order. And someone asked if there was there a need to have any more debate on the issue. And this was probably the most contentious night of the actual regular session, outside of the special session they had for HB2. So this most contentious debate, and Appadaka turned his microphone on and said, when asked, you know, do we need more to have more debate on this issue, he said, nah, we're good. And that was it.
That was it. Yeah.
That was it. Nah, we're good. Yeah. And I thought, man, that's the rules chairman has got to be tough, and that's what they've got to do. McCrory, on the other hand, I thought he was a character, and I remember there was a funny quote that we found at the Insider when we were looking back at funny quotes for the year.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, somebody from the Charlotte Observer mentioned a story that they'd written about someone who was transsexual in Charlotte.
Transgender or transsexual?
Transgender. Pardon
okay.
me. Transgender,
okay. You're fine.
I think, in the midst of the HB2, you know, in the midst of the HB2 storm.
Uh-huh.
And McCrory, who generally had a thin skin, I thought. I mean, maybe he started that way without one, but I think by the end he was just beaten up and tired.
Nah, I would second that. He was fairly thin-skinned, as these public officials go.
Yeah, he said, someone said, have you read the story in the Charlotte Observer about this transgender, you know, the profile of this important transgender person? And McCrory said, actually, I don't read your paper as much as I used to.
That's pretty good.
That's
yeah.
Pretty good, too. You know, that was pretty good, too.
I like it.
Yeah, so there were some, you know, Phil Berger was fascinating because, you know, he was, I always thought he was like the man behind the man. That was probably the most powerful man in the state.
You're saying Berger was, or you're saying Jim Blaine as chief of staff is? Just to be clear.
Yeah, I don't know. Jim Blaine is, you know, he was always, he would come in and see which way you thought the story was going. You know, he really had his ear to the ground.
Sure,
right?
But you were saying Berger is the most powerful man in the state, or it goes hand
in
hand.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. But I, you know, and Roy Cooper these days is trying to figure out how to assert his power. Who else was a really quotable character?
I think Bob Rucho is pretty quotable. You liked Latin or the Magna Carta, Skip Stam, who has since retired from the House, was fairly quotable. We haven't mentioned any Democrats, to be fair.
Actually, I was going to say, you know who was really fun? I'll tell a quick story there of Greer Martin.
Okay.
Representative from Raleigh, who's got a lot of firepower when it comes to, I think that he was the House, for the, on the House side, he was really the point man for the elections, trying to push back against the supermajority for the House.
Right.
Last fall.
Yes.
Martin was really fun to watch on the floor when he was debating. And he said that he actually was really trying to maintain that tradition of Skip Stam, who was somebody who really was great at floor debate, respectful, but also really liked to throw punches. And I remember one day seeing Greer Martin. It was a debate on partisanship on school boards. And it was, might have been, I forget where it was, Transylvania maybe?
Okay.
They wanted to make the school board election partisan again. So as opposed to having the candidates having no party affiliation, they had to declare which party they were from. And Greer Martin was talking about how this was just, you know, this was just sort of this problem in society of this divisive partisanship, and education didn't need that, and what was the point of all this. And he at one point mispronounced the name of the other member on the floor, the Republican ranking member who had introduced the bill.
Okay.
And did he mean to do that or not? I wasn't sure. However, when you're on the House floor and people are really debating, there's a lot of testosterone and energy just flying around.
For sure.
And people are really messing with each other. And I saw Martin then quickly leave the chamber, and then the debate continued. It was a good debate about citizenship, about partisanship in society. Where are we going? What do these electoral bodies mean? Greer Martin then popped back in a different door, and I saw him walking back to his seat, and he pointed at the member whose name he mispronounced, and he fired his finger like a little gun, and then he winked at them. He winked at them.
And he winked
like,
at them.
Oh, yeah, I'm just messing with it.
What was the response from the member?
I think he shook his head, like, for God's sake, what's Greer Martin up to?
That's a good way to put it. Testosterone flying around. That's not going to stop anytime soon, either in Raleigh or on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, and you get those fun moments. There was another one that I remember last year that was a lot of fun. Mark Binker, who was previously at WRAL, and if I now understand correctly, he's working at the Insider, right?
You understand correctly, yes.
Yeah, that's very exciting. I need to give him a buzz, and if you see him, congratulate him and Clifton Dowell. The Insider is a great institution there, very important. But last year, it was real funny. I remember Phil Berger came in, Senate Leader Phil Berger came in, and announced an initiative that the Senate had for increasing education funding. And it was within the budget. So it was an idea. Would it really make it through the budget process? That's always a big question, right? So he gets up. He makes this announcement in the press room, in the press conference room, right in the heart of the General Assembly, right in the heart. The press gallery is on the back, kind of just across the hall from that. And we all flood in, and we listen to him make this pronouncement. And Mark Binker is sitting in the front row. And Binker says, you know, we've heard this. We've seen this movie before. That's what he says about this idea that there's going to be all this new money for teachers and whatnot, boosting the education budget. Binker says, he's in the front row, asks the first question, and he fires the question right to Berger, and he says, we've seen this movie before. And Berger, comedic timing that he showed on occasion, great pause, and then he said, and I've read your reviews before.
I don't remember that.
It was delightful.
I don't remember that.
And when Phil Berger turns it on, it can be a lot of fun.
That's pretty good.
And Binker was there, and Binker just chuckled. This sort of great grin came across his face.
Yeah.
Well, he just nailed me.
That's a good little give and take. In the corner, on the ropes, wherever. Good deal.
And that's why I think this podcast is great, because a lot of those great stories of the fact that government actually works and people are compromising and having a chuckle with each other.
That gets lost,
unfortunately,
right?
A lot of the folks in our country don't hear that stuff anymore, and that's sometimes, I think, as much of a fault of news media organizations as it is politicians or the people. You know,
I agree.
Well,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I remember reading this great Tom Friedman quote right before the presidential election last year, that a Nigerian Tom Friedman, the global columnist with the New York Times, a good guy, I've met him a couple times, and he said, he wrote this column that said that he had a Nigerian colleague who told him that you Americans kick your democracy around like it's a football. But it's not. It's a Fabergé egg. And you need to be careful, otherwise you'll really damage it.
I'm thinking of that Mighty Duck scene. Do you remember the movie? I'm a little younger than you are, but they Emilio Estevez gets the Mighty Ducks team, his like young youth hockey team, out on the ice, and he gets them passing with eggs. And at first, of course, they're cracking all the eggs, but they have to learn how to handle the egg from stick to stick. Does that ring a bell?
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
All right. We'll leave it there for now. Dan Boylan, you probably remember him, or you recognize the name from the NC Insider, and now you can read his work on national security issues at the Washington Times. I'm sure we'll cross paths again. Dan, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Jeff, a great honor, and I already miss the longleaf pines of North Carolina.
That'll do it for this edition of the WUNC Longleaf Politics Podcast. Feel free to share this episode, Twitter and Facebook, whatever other social media means you use as well. And you can subscribe to the program on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Find all the latest political news at our website, WUNC.org. Have a great weekend.